Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, let's hoop it up, man.
There we go. There we go. We get the original intro back after like 4 months. You know, it's nice to hear it.
It was seven podcasts.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's like 8 months, so it's fine. Fits my narrative. Anyway, we've got the opening week of NBA Cup action underway. A lot of fun basketball since the last time we've got to talk. I guess we're going to reverse course this week. I will kick things off. We once again need to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers. Won't hang here too long, but you start a season 15-0. You deserve a shout out at the very least. As of recording early on a Monday, second in offense, sixth in defense, second in net rating per cleaning the glass. And when I first brought up the Cavs this year, they were my opening weekend takeaway team. It was mostly through the lens of what Evan Mobley was doing, what Darius Garland were doing, because of their importance to the short-term and long-term health of the Cavs. Was very excited about Evan Mobley's evolution offensively. Very excited about Darius Garland looking more comfortable, being healthier, first and foremost, but looking more comfortable, being more aggressive, hunting more of those pull-ups, and what that could do to help further open up this Cleveland Cavaliers offense. Gave Jared Allen a quick shout-out, mentioned Donovan Mitchell briefly. I think it is officially time to circle back to Donovan Mitchell, because what he's been doing over this recent stretch of games is kind of absurd. Like, early in the year, felt like he was very much picking his spots within the context of Darius Garland being more aggressive, more of the offense shifting towards Evan Mobley. And so you would get the random quarter burst. I pointed out, you know, early in the season, that third quarter that he had against Detroit, to where he kind of turned that game on his head. But now he seems more comfortable and more aggressive in general, picking out his spots. Over his last three games, really across this four-game stretch over the week, but last three games for Donovan Mitchell, 32 points per game. He is shooting 45% from three on 14 three-point attempts per game, Steve. He is shooting the leather off the ball, and it's not just catch-and-shoot looks. It is him boogieing in space. When he has a matchup, he really has you at his mercy. He's done a really good job of not only mixing in the drives, but again, getting to that step back, getting to some of those side steps. And the timeliness of some of these made shots just really hurt. Like, he has tossed in countless daggers for this Cavs group this year, particularly over the last week. He's just felt more in control offensively. Underrated in complementing the scoring, 15 assists to one turnover over his last three games. So the fact that he is not only putting the ball in the basket, but making sure that the offense stays going, he's been able to attack tilted defenses, win the balls in the hands of Darius Garland or Evan Mobley. And when he has it, he just has the ball on the string right now. So I want to shout out shout out Donovan Mitchell for the high level of play that he's put together. Evan Mobley continuing to play well on both ends of the floor. Darius Garland continuing to stay aggressive. Three-point percentage has dipped a little bit over the past week, but still hunting those shots. Overall, defenses have to pay closer attention to him when he's coming off of screens. Jared Allen no longer shooting what felt like 95% from the floor, but still doing a really good job as a finisher, lurking around the dunker spot when necessary. Really good pick-and-roll partner. They continue to use him as a hub to get those guards open. Defensively, still switching, still navigating well in a drop. Still challenging shots at the rim. Cleveland's defense remains elite. And the second unit, or just the non-core four pieces for Cleveland, continue to impress for me. Ty Jerome over the past week, 13 points, 5 assists, shooting 50% from three over the past week. I've continued to enjoy his command of the offense when he's been out there. The passing has been incredibly fun for me, but mixing in drives, mixing in floaters, generally taking care of the ball as well. He's competing. Caris LeVert, some really consistent play on both ends of the floor, which I've appreciated. He's operated well as like a fifth for Cleveland alongside the core four, or when they go to some of those hybrid second units, his ability to play on or off the ball, able to end possessions with some tough shots, things have been very important for them. George Niang, his spacing has remained important. His off-ball screening has been important. Some of the random relief buckets that we've seen from him inside the arc has helped grease the wheels when some of the stars are on the bench for Cleveland. Isaac Okoro knocking down corner shots, defending well, timely cuts, timely screens. It's just been really good stuff on both ends of the floor for the Cleveland Cavaliers. A big matchup against the Boston Celtics on Tuesday night. We'll see if the streak ends then, but it's been a lot of fun watching the Cavs play basketball this year.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about them over the years. We talked about them earlier this year. But again, 15-0, fourth team in NBA history to start a season 15-0. I think the last two, the 15-16 Warriors, 93-94 Rockets. Kenny Atkinson, only coach in NBA history to win the first 15 games to start a tenure with a franchise. I think the biggest thing for me with Cleveland, you nailed a whole bunch of it, so I won't linger too long. It goes back to something that Kenny Atkinson said in the preseason, I think I mentioned it on the pod, is how much he believed in the depth that this team had. And you see that from the guys you mentioned, LeVert, Jerome, Sam Merrill, George Niang. He's getting the most out of them, which helps elevate that starting lineup and helps elevate when they stagger that starting lineup. And now it's an ecosystem where everyone can succeed. So it's been really fun to watch that. Darius Garland, 50-40-90 splits, 21-7, been fantastic. I think the biggest thing for me, and it'll be interesting to see, in this Boston matchup, it's much less of a result-based outcome for me and more how do they take what they've built and what does it look like against Boston? Mm-hmm. How do they handle the personnel where we have size that we can throw at Darius Garland? We have size that we can throw at Donovan Mitchell. We can execute multiple schemes. So Darius Garland, you've been very decisive. Are you going to make enough plays and shots to get us out of a drop? How are you going to handle things on the other end when the Boston Celtics, famously known for attacking matchups, will likely look to put those guards in action? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it'll be like a, I don't want to say a test, but it'll be a good measuring stick type game where we're going to understand, okay, what exactly is this Cleveland team? Obviously, they're very good, but what do they need to maybe work on to complete the story in the playoffs? But, you know, it's hard to kind of do a pod every week and not talk about the team that just hasn't lost. And it's a team that we've talked a lot about. So it's been fun to watch. I
like it. Props to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Just pulled this up very quickly. To your point about teams putting Darius Garland in action, and Boston certainly will be a team that at least attempts to do so. Garland has been the screener defender in pick and roll for 53 reps so far this year, 0.98 points per possession on those trips, which is a fine number. Obviously, you want it to be as low as possible, but that's right. That's right around league average in terms of overall pick and roll play. So if the Cavs are able to get Darius Garland out of trouble with some pre-switches, or if they're able to just load up the help in a way to where Boston isn't generating easy or clean looks, I think they should be able to survive. And as you pointed out, Cleveland in transition slash early offense has been really good so far this year. They just have a better feel for what they want to get to, how they want to get to it. And so if Boston can't punish the easy stuff, this could become a bit of a track meet between these two teams. So I'm excited to watch them play. And to the overall point, it's been a blast watching this Cavs team play.
I will throw out as a counter, you underestimate the stubbornness of the Boston Celtics to continue to put pressure on you. We will use Drew as a screener. We'll use Derek White as a screener. You thought you figured that out? Well, fine. Jason Tatum will screen, and we'll get the switch that way. And now here's Jaylen Brown. Or, you know, we'll screen before the screen comes. Now we'll bring a big in. And empty side action. Swing it to a big on the wing. They just keep moving. So I'm interested to see what that looks like.
They keep going. The other team that I wanted to bring up here before I toss it to you officially, Steve. Let's circle back to the Los Angeles Lakers. Currently 9-4 right now. Fifth in offense, 21st in defense, 13th in net rating per clean in the glass. And to kind of narrow down the date filtering here, the Lakers are 5-0, five-game win streak right now, tied for the longest win streak in the West right now. 5-0 since a change to the starting lineup. That change came after the end of their road trip. The Lakers lost to Memphis. One of the louder moments of that Memphis game came midway through the third quarter. Not the greatest stretch of basketball from then starting guard D'Angelo Russell. It was the missed pull-up three, ends up giving up a back cut that leads to a J-Huff three, empty trip. He then loses Jake LaRavia off the ball. That ends up in a layup. Then he takes the three over J-Huff, gets it blocked. J-Huff gets the three on the other end. D'Lo is subbed out. We don't see D'Lo again. J.J. Redick talked a little bit about it post-game, talked about the level of compete and attention to detail, et cetera. Next game, we see Cam Reddish in the starting lineup. And since then, we've seen Rui's missed the last couple of games. They had got a guy cycle in. But the move from D'Lo as a starter to the second unit, I feel like has done a solid job of kind of balancing things out for the Lakers. I think naturally with D'Lo going to the bench, that starting unit has now gone more to LeBron James making more decisions. And generally, it's a good idea to let LeBron command the offense, which leads me to LeBron James having four triple-doubles in a row and having four in his last five games, which is not something that we've seen from LeBron in his career. First time he's ever had four straight triple-doubles. You add in the obvious age filter here. He's the oldest player to ever do that. So a general kudos to LeBron for continuing to perform like this, this deeply into his career. I feel like we could talk about that every week on the pod if we wanted to. But LeBron's been really good. And I think the recalibrating of the offense has helped open things up. And I think with D'Lo going to the bench, he's been able to find a little bit of a level of comfort with that second unit, getting more touches there. He has more room and a little bit more freedom to kind of play his game and headline some of those second units. You've seen the bench scoring for the Lakers overall go up over these past five games. And with the starters, again, more LeBron, more AD, but they've gotten off to better starts. And like a stat that I found this morning kind of popped for me, you kind of feel it, but getting the stat confirmation just made me feel good inside. But leading into the lineup change, so through games played on November 7th, the Lakers had a minus 8.6 net rating in first quarters. That was 22nd in the NBA. And since making the lineup change, it's a plus 1.4 net rating in the first quarter. Slight positive, about middle of the pack since that stretch. But going from a pure negative to a slight positive is a big deal for them. They have a 124.6 offensive rating in first quarter since the lineup change, which is a top five mark in the league. And so when you're able to get off to those better starts, you get LeBron involved early, you get AD involved early, you're able to sprinkle in some of the usage for Austin Reeves. It's just putting them in a better position. And then you get the wave with the second unit, especially if they are able to get out, get stops and get out and run. So that portion has stood out to me. And, oh, did you want to hop in?
No, I have an annoying question prepared for you.
Okay. This should be good. Do you want to go ahead and ask the annoying question?
Nope, keep going.
Okay, fair enough. And then the other thing that I wanted to point out with the offense in particular, as Dalton Connect has gotten a couple of starts across this five-game stretch, I've just really enjoyed the usage for him. I think he brings obvious value as a shooter, someone that can space in the weak side and make help side decisions difficult. Someone you can space one pass away from the LeBron post-ups or the Anthony Davis post-ups, which the AD post-ups have been really effective over the past week and a half. And they've been solid all year long, but the numbers certainly pop over this five-game winning streak. But you can space them pretty much anywhere. But the usage for him as a screener and him flying off of stuff has been incredibly fun. It's something that we talked about on the opening week pod. But, hey, let's go Chicago action and have an exit screen on the other side. Let's go high pick and roll with an exit screen on the other side. Let's get into some get action where Dalton Connect's coming off the wide screen, handed back to whoever the ball handler initially was, whether that's D'Lo or LeBron or Austin Reeves. And there was a possession in the second Memphis game that the Lakers got the win in, obviously, to where I think it's D'Lo bringing the ball up the floor. So they go to the wide pin down for Dalton Connect. D'Lo tosses it to him, gives it back to Dalton. You think it's about to be D'Lo and Anthony Davis in action together. AD flips, reverses course, screens for Dalton Connect again. D'Lo passes the ball back to Dalton Connect. I'm just like watching this live. Are they about to flow? Are they just reversing where they want to run this? Are they just going back to the get action to going? Dalton fakes the handoff, gets all the way downhill, gets a dunk. And I'm just like, you know what? Being able to make live reads out of a basic setup like that, exciting to me. Just kind of shows the layering that they can kind of tap into when you have a movement shooter like that. And even going back to the post play, again, they can space Dalton one pass away. They've done that. But having Dalton screen for LeBron James when AD's posting up, like you don't really know what's coming. Is it just split action? And as a defense, do you want to switch that and feed LeBron an easier matchup to poke at in that regard? Like, I just love the way that they're starting to layer some of that stuff in when Dalton's in the lineup. So just wanted to give a quick kudos to the Lakers offense. Also point out the lineup change has kind of worked for what they wanted to do. Better start. Second unit has been playing better.
Okay. I take my question back. It's a long month.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, well, that is going to do it for me, unless you had Laker thoughts. Then you can get into the team that you want to talk about.
Well, you said the Lakers have what win streak?
It's a five-game win streak right now.
Who else has a five-game win streak in the Western Conference, Nikias?
That would be the Houston Rockets, Steve.
Let's talk about the Houston Rockets, right? So I think one of the fun things for me has been trying to track and notice teams that have made improvements but are still trying to figure it out all the way around. So we talked about the Lakers, top five offense, right? Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you'd want to see. They've done a lot of great things. Now it's okay. How do we keep that going while getting this defense up? The Houston Rockets, 11th in offensive rating, 3rd in defensive rating. Mm-hmm. Last year, 20th in offensive rating, 10th in defensive rating. You can kind of see the give and take with these teams on what that does. So if Houston now says our defense is this much better and we've cleaned up some of these things offensively, we're now a better team. And I think that's been part of the fun of watching Houston on this journey, especially during this win streak. I think offensively, they're doing a lot of little things that is building a stronger base for this team. Mm-hmm. A lot of talk when it comes to Houston was what, Nick Eyes?
Playing through Şengün. Play through with Jalen Green,
right?
Yeah.
Play through Şengün. Play through Şengün. And my counterpoint was always, that's fine. What do you do around that? Because if you just give Şengün the ball and run a bunch of handoffs, what is it going to be? Hey, they're playing with much more intention when they play through Şengün, when they run their elbow action. There's more movement. There's more cuts. There's more purpose. And it's making them overall more unpredictable. Doesn't necessarily take away some of the concerns as far as pace goes, shooting goes, tempo goes. But there's a stronger foundation than before in the half court. Mm-hmm. If you are looking at this Rockets team and there are guys you feel comfortable helping off of, whether it's a Jabari, whether it's Dylan Brooks, those guys are cutting now. And you don't know when they're going to cut. Mm-hmm. And that makes it tough. An elbow catch for Şengün is fantastic. But again, because they're building that base better around it, you don't know what it's going to be. Is it going to be a screen for Jabari to get him in the post? Is it going to be a handoff for Fred VanVleet? It's going to be a split for Jalen Green. Is it going to be inverted pick and roll? It's forcing defenses to be a little bit more honest with the Rockets, and it's helping them kind of balance things out in the half court and then kind of blend their talents together. I think you see at times when they get stops, stronger emphasis of getting the ball at the court. And then, hey, if we don't have anything quick, we can play through Şengün. We can get to our dribble handoff game. And they have multiple people in that lineup that you feel comfortable playing two-man game with, and they'll make the right read. I think one of the things that helps the movement is Jalen Green. The more movement for Jalen Green, the better. I know a lot of the talk is going to be about the shot and the shot selection and the shooting numbers and the shooting splits and the – I understand. Shooting, I think last time I looked at the tracking data, he's shooting like 23% on pull-up twos. He's trying to beat the drop with the mid-range. It's not falling right now. But I think you can see little pieces of things getting better on that end. Mm-hmm. Some of his handoffs and pick and rolls feel more like they're within the flow of the offense as opposed to I'm starting the possession, I'm going to take the shot. Still has those. Don't get me wrong. But there are still more of those. You're seeing him being used more in those elbow actions. Him going to more pass and cut action. That's going to give him a pick and roll opportunity without signaling to the defense that a pick and roll is coming, without him taking 18 dribbles before it happens. Mm-hmm. So I also like that he's reading more. So while, yeah, you would like the shots to go down, he's taking some pretty quality pull-ups. If you're in a drop, I'm just going to come right off, take the space and shoot it. Or I'm going to be willing to get downhill, engage the defense, see if I can get a late pass to Şengün. It's just been good stuff there. How do you feel about the guys? How do you feel about Dylan Brooks' time?
Tell you what, to your shooting portion, I think he's the only Houston Rocket with volume that is shooting well from three right now. But again, I think it's a continuation of last year, to where it hasn't felt like we've had the consecutive hijacked possessions for Dylan Brooks. Like, he's been pretty timely and pretty intentional about his shot selection, in addition to the defense that he continues to bring. So I haven't had much issue with Dylan.
The Dylan Brooks time feels a lot better when he's attacking the basket and driving and trying to post up. Then ISO. Fred VanVleet and Şengün, still pretty good in pick and roll. Doesn't feel like they have to lean on it to the same degree they did last year. Mm-hmm. That's a positive. When it comes to the Rockets, I like the rotation. You bring in Amen Thompson, you bring in Tari Eason. Mm-hmm. Energy. You feel the athleticism of that second unit. They work on defense. You have Thompson and Eason in transition. You have their drives in the half court. It's got a little bit of fire and ice. Feels like they're a team that are building like multiple identities, multiple lineups that function for what they want to do on both ends of the floor. And I think overall, this is a Houston team that's at their best when they get out of their own way. Can you tell me who Nekias is number one in the league in opponent fast break points?
That sounds like a Houston Rockets stat to me.
Sure does. And guess what else they do? They don't turn it over a ton. So you're not getting those easy ones. And then on the flip side, they are fourth in points off turnovers themselves, second in second chance points, fifth in fast break points, sixth in points in the paint. They take care of the easy ones. They get what they want to do. They know their identity. They continue to get after it. And then I think on the other end of the floor, the defensive side, you got to take a look at the activity from the Rockets. A lot of times in today's NBA, people talk about the lack of defense, right?
They sure do.
Talk about the struggles teams have defending, no one's guarding. I think for me, I always circle back to teams are defending the first action pretty well most of the time, for the majority of the time. It's sustaining that defense. It's getting from help and recover to a closeout and keeping the ball in front. It's having that base. The best defenses are the teams that have that strong base to where, hey, we might get beat, but we're going to fly around. We're going to make it tough on you. Mm-hmm. Houston has strengthened their base so much that it's fun to watch. They really do a good job of showing help. They anticipate the next pass. Their closeouts are usually pretty solid. They work as a team to protect the paint. They're able to mix in multiple schemes, so we can mix in switching. Some of the fun of Jabari at the five last year was, hey, we're switching everything, right?
Yep.
Well, hey, how about we just have Jabari guard the center, and Shingun, you can guard a wing in Rome, mm-hmm. and we're going to switch everything. Go watch the Houston Rockets and watch them, just watch them execute a scram switch where Fred VanVleet switches, and he's
out of there.
That man is gone to the corner. Like that to me is a sign of a defense that knows what it wants to do and is defending together on a string. And the more you watch them, the more you see that pressure in the ball, active on the ball, comfortable defending late in the clock. That's what you need over and over and over again over the course of a game. I think they have pretty strong personnel to defend multiple positions. Mm-hmm. So for me, there are still questions about the Rockets, but you get off to this kind of start in the Western Conference, very important. You have success, that can lead into buy-in on the identity, which can push you further. And there's a sustainability on both ends that feels stronger than last year. I feel like they've mm-hmm. built off that base. So I just want to give a salute to the Rockets.
No, I like that. I like that. And I think to start with the defense first, that has certainly been the most enjoyable part for me watching the Rockets play this year. Dylan Brooks continues to pester people. Complimentary. He's taken on a multitude of tough defensive assignments this year. He'll guard your point guard. He'll guard your best wing. We've seen in the Spurs matchup, hey, I'll take on Wimby if necessary. He just does not shy away from any challenges. So, like, from a mentality standpoint, you love that. But he's also just been really darn good defensively this year. Fred VanVleet continues to be pesky at the point of attack. And I think for a team that switches as much as Houston does or has this year, you need someone that can communicate, can get out, as you mentioned, the scram switching in particular. But when you do have to defend someone bigger, Fred VanVleet has long been one of the best guards in the NBA in punching up above their weight, figuratively and literally. So being able to flatten out actions in the half court to that degree, I think, is very important. I'm glad you brought up Shingun, like them going with more of the cross matchups in the front court has popped for me. But even when Shingun's directly involved in action, he's been up there. I'm getting up to touch. I'm getting up to the level. I'm dropping out of here. And as you mentioned, the help behind him has been very strong. They've also asked him to switch quite a bit this year. Just pulled up the numbers on second stretch from earlier today. His switch rate is basically doubled from last year. Switched about 4% of pick and rolls last year, switching about 8% heading into the action on Monday. And that's a pretty big deal for being able to toss it in. Like, is he Bam Adebayo? No, he's not. But when you have a strong infrastructure behind him, you feel less bad about him on an island, because we know we can swarm and just cover things up for him. If he does get beat, we can draw charges. We have a lineup full of guys and a rotation full of guys that don't mind taking on physicality and getting turnovers that way, or because of the general speed and instincts that they have. If Shingun does contain the drive well enough and you want to kick it out, that could just be a pick six for Houston. And then they're off to the races. And so the fact that they have trusted Shingun in space a little bit more with the roaming, and we want to play you higher up, we'll switch you if necessary, because we trust you can hold your own, but if you can't, we got you. It's led to your point, that stronger base defensively. And offensively for me, I'm glad you mentioned Jalen Green. The shooting numbers aren't great. The process does feel a little bit better. Passing a little bit more often in pick and roll. Second spectrum, they track that as well. So pass rate is up in that case. I think once the pull-up starts falling for him, it's going to feel a lot different offensively. Because I think just in general, the shooting efficiency for Houston right now is what's dragging down the offense. They are 22nd in half-court offense right now. But to your point, and you detailed it beautifully, the process just feels so much better than it did last year. And if the only thing I can really say definitively about Houston right now is I hope that their shooters knock down shots instead of I don't know what they're trying to get to, which feels like a change from some of the games we saw last year, I think you absolutely take that if you're a Rockets fan. You take that if you're the Rockets organization. And just in general, going to some of the players, mention Fred defensively. Part of the reason the Rockets' turnover rate is so low is because Fred just doesn't throw the ball away. Like, it's always a tricky balance for guards like him, to where you see the low turnover rate. There are also sometimes you're just missing passing windows because you're not a super aggressive passer. But I think for a young team like Houston that is still trying to establish that foundation offensively, you're okay with the caretaker at point guard right now, especially since you ultimately want Şengün and Jalen Green to kind of grow into your tent poles offensively anyway. So Fred being able to direct traffic, make sure we are at least getting shots up, is a subtle thing. It's a simple thing, but it's an important thing for what they're trying to build right now. And because Fred has the comfort of playing off the ball on top of that, if Jalen has it cooking, you send extra attention, Fred will punish you and he can shoot from deep range. Or if he's your second side option now, as you mentioned, him and Şengün already have chemistry with the amount of ball screens they ran last season. They're one of the highest volume pick and roll pairings in the league last year. So just being able to use Fred as a fail safe, as you know, instead of like, you are the best player, you have to lead us, it's a different change and it just feels so much better for Houston. And then circling back to the defense real quick, I'm glad you brought up Amin Thompson and Tari Eason when they come in. They may just be the best defensive like wing duo coming off the bench in the NBA. And if they aren't, they're at least the most fun to watch. Tari can guard anybody. Amin flies around. They force a ton of turnovers. It's used to transition attack. It didn't even watching them offensively. Tari with more of the self-creation reps. It's not just the cutting for him. It's not just the spot-up shots for him. He doesn't mind boogieing inside the arc, getting to some of those mid-range pull-ups. Amin Thompson being used as a screener, occasionally being used as a pick-and-roll ball handler as well. The jumper still has to come along, but you can already see the shades, and you saw him last year, but you can see the shades of the do-everything wing that he can be. And with those two on the floor, it's nearly a plus 11 net rating with those two on the floor. We've seen them close out games already, so I really like what Houston is building. I've enjoyed watching that defense in particular. It's good stuff happening right now.
All right. I'm gonna hit pause real quick. We're going to try and challenge this assertion you threw out there that they are the best defensive wing combo. I like the addition of, or at least they're the most fun to watch, because now I can't argue that. That's your fun factor. Better than Brooklyn?
Yeah.
They said that relatively quickly. Okay.
Yeah, I love, you know, I'm a fan of what Jalen Wilson and Zaire are doing off the bench, but no, I would take Amin and Tari.
Okay. Well, Isaac Okoro does not have a mate that you would really put up there.
Him and
Quinn Grimes, Najee Marshall.
I would take the Houston duo. Though that is a good call from you.
Of course it is. It's what I do. Let's see. There's got to be a Golden State one I could trap you on.
Well, the thing is, they have so much change with their starting lineup. Like, who counts as the bench piece?
De'Anthony Melton and Gary Payton II.
Well, get well soon, De'Anthony Melton. And as for Gary, do we consider him a bench piece? Because he's also started some games this year. Like, I don't know. That is a good one, though.
I know. That's why I did it.
You got it, big dog. You got it. But no, I'll probably take the Houston duo.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to find one. Don't worry. I'm going to find one. I'm going to try. Hold on. Jalen Wells off the bench yet? Nah, that won't count. I'm going to get Vince Williams Jr. He's going to get me. Can't do it with the Clippers. All their people start. Andre Jackson Jr. starts now. This is the most dunker spot thing ever. DiVincenzo, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Got him.
Ooh.
Got him. Got him.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
There is more size with the Houston duo, though.
Sure. Mm. But also,
I love Nikhil and Dante's very good.
Tap out, GOAT.
I'll roll Houston, but I hate what you did to me right there. Actually, you know, leave your comment in the chat. What's a better defensive duo? Dante DiVincenzo and Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Tari Eason and Amin Thompson? You give us your thoughts, chat section.
Hey, dude, you are very lucky that Oklahoma City has had to change their starting lineup, because that was my ace card.
Yeah, that probably would have did it.
But I will take my victory and leave.
That is fair. That is fair. Are there any other Houston Nuggets you want to toss in or any other team you want to shout out?
I mean, I do want to give a salute to the Portland Trailblazers. Chauncey Billups said, A, if you could sleep at night, you are a loser. Guess what? They ain't lost since. Shaden Sharp, back-to-back 30-point games. And I think the most impressive point to me has just been the development of the patience, the control that he's shown. In that Minnesota game, when he's able to bring it down the stretch, he was able to hurt them in every single way possible. I can reject and drive to the basket. Pick and roll, you're in a drop. I pull up for three. I get you to come up higher on the court. Now I blow by you and finish in the paint. That's really important development for him. Because mm-hmm. he has the athleticism, he has the scoring ability, but now you can start to see him really start to put pressure on defenses and read what they're doing as opposed to just kind of predetermining at times. That's been fun. I think Scoot Henderson, did you know he's shooting 40.9% on catch and shoot threes?
Did not know that.
Yeah. But I'm not gonna give you the volume, but you know, it is what it is.
Fair enough.
I have liked when he does the thing where he attacks under control, and he seems to do it more often than he used to. Donovan Klingon has been really fun to watch. He just gets after it. Robert Williams,
welcome back. Good gracious!
But this is a Portland team where I've raised the eyebrow about them because they have a lot of pieces mm-hmm. that I enjoy. Now, what does that add up to in the Western Conference? Who knows? But they've at least given themselves a chance to see how far it can go. Now, it's going to get interesting for them very soon. If I remember the schedule correctly, I think it's a little tough. At OKC, at Houston twice, at Memphis, at Indiana, home against the Kings, home against Dallas, at the Clippers.
Oh. Well, do your best.
So it'll get pretty interesting right there.
Yeah. But, like, even with those matchups, like, those are all, I think it's fair to say, like, they really should be better teams than Portland right now. Like, Portland has elements that can bother pretty much everyone on that schedule, at least to a degree. So, like, at the very least, like, these may just be competitive losses for Portland. But to your point, like, I like the way they've been playing. Did you have more important things? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Nope, sure don't. Give me the team that's making you scratch your head, buddy.
I got you. And before doing so, I will at least say the name of Tumani Kamara, who continues to defend well and knock down shots.
What do you mean? That man gets a steal every game.
He sure does. And also, Delano Banton, who during his winning streak is shooting 60% from three on volume, which is kind of neat. It's cool now, to watch him kind of pop towards the end of last season. But go ahead.
I'm going to raise my hand. Right? Okay. He just is on volume. For the season, he averages 12 minutes a game. He averages 6.6 field goal attempts.
He's aggressive. Big guard, et cetera.
He feels like a middle reliever basketball version. Like, you can close the game or you just go out there and shoot.
Hey, Delano gonna mix it up.
Continue. I'm glad. Who else are we missing on the Nekias Blazer bingo card?
Well, you shout out Donovan Klingon already. I think Banton and Kamara would do it for me. You hit everybody else.
No, so not Jeremy Grant?
Nope.
Shocker.
General shout out to him. You know what I mean?
General shout out. Okay.
Talented wing.
Okay.
Well, you asked, I answered. I don't know what you want me to do. But anyway, as far as the team that I'm thinking about, I want to talk a little bit about the Indiana Pacers. It's just been interesting watching them kind of find themselves on both ends of the floor. And I think this two-game set with Miami over the weekend was pretty emblematic of like what it can slash should look like versus what it happens when it doesn't look right. Because in that Friday matchup, and particularly on the defensive end, like they just weren't settled in at all. Like I think turnovers helped Miami get out in transition. That obviously leads to a flood of points, et cetera. But even within the half court, and the great Caitlin Cooper wrote about this as well. Subscribe to our Patreon if you haven't already. Incredible basketball mind. But when their weak side is off, it is tough sledding. Especially once you consider like what they've been doing with Miles Turner this year and in years past. Like they've just had Miles Turner playing pretty high up in pick and roll this year. And so if the weak side isn't in, if they're not ready to tag, if they're not ready to meet a roller, you just get free stuff, against Indiana. And even if your shots aren't falling, you just feel generally good about their process. So on Friday, Miami, you know, second quarter and really that opening stretch of the third quarter where they pretty much put the game out of reach. Kevin Love went off in that 5-minute stretch. It was just, hey, let's just put it, you're big in action. Let's slip. Let's see if you're ready to deal with it. If you're not, we got a shot at the rim. Or if you over-rotate, here's a catch-and-shoot three that we were able to generate. And on Sunday, the defense just felt so much better. And I think something you pointed out during the broadcast, we got to do some league pass things, so check that out. I think the switching was much better, or much more frequent at the very least. They were able to flatten out Miami a little bit. On-ball physicality was better. And the weak side was in earlier. And they were able to piece that together. And once they were able to force some turnovers from Miami or just get forced misses in general, you saw the transition play open back up in a way that we're used to seeing with the Indiana Pacers. I think narrowed down to players like Tyrese Haliburton over this 2-game stretch. Much more aggressive than we've seen him, you know, if you compare it to earlier in the season. It's been cool watching him just get more and more aggressive, more and more comfortable hunting his shots. I think that is an important element to what Indiana wants to do offensively. As they have played a little bit slower this year, Tyrese forcing the issue should help in that regard. And so I'm just still trying to get, just trying to gain a beat on what the Pacers are, because it's still been kind of inconsistent for them on both ends of the floor, and certainly the injuries don't help. But that's why they're on my mind right now. It's just been an interesting start to the season for them.
Well, there goes the words I was going to point out.
My fault.
Let me point them out. I think for me with Indiana, here's the thing. We've seen this movie before to a certain degree. So the defensive issues for the Pacers, they're not new. They're almost in around the same spot defensively than they were last year, or hovering around the same spot at least. Their personnel issues are their personnel issues. Now, as I said last year, I think if you give them a focus and you give them a game plan, they can kind of work towards what they want to do, which we saw in that second game in the Miami. We're going to take the guards away. We're going to switch. We feel comfortable with this. Night in, night out, though, that base has not been strong enough. But the real kicker is the offense is not the same elite offense it was last year. It's not necessarily their fault. But just like Sacramento had that drop-off, Indiana is now having that drop-off. Mm-hmm. You scored 90 points against the Magic. You scored 83 points against the Hornets. That's not the Pacer basketball that you had last year.
Yeah.
So now, because, you know, you have the combination, like Charlotte only scored 103, Orlando only scored 94, but you're not scoring at the same level. That's kind of putting, allowing your defense to have a level of room for error. And so they've got to find a way to balance out offensively the pace and the tempo and moving the ball from side to side, keeping pressure on defenses, getting to things early and making a defense make decisions, which they did in that Miami game, the second one we saw. Over the course of that game, as it went on, started to slow down a little bit, started to bog down a little bit. How did we handle that in the half court? In close games, we mentioned the defense, the weak side. Tyrese Haliburton is going to be put in action. How do we handle that? Where do we go to in the fourth quarter? How we balance that pace and tempo with using Pascal and Tyrese in action together? I mean, I thought that they did a great job saying, hey, we're just going to run wedge roll. Miles Turner, you space in the corner. We're going to be fantastic. But until that offense gets, I don't want to say bats to that level, because that's a high bar to clear.
Yeah.
But until they get that comfort between the half court and the transition pace game and that defense, like, it's yin and yang for them. If they're scoring, they're going to have a better chance defensively because they're going to be set.
Mm-hmm.
They're not scoring, it's going to be tough because, okay, now we're having to react. And more teams know, oh, we just have to make them keep guarding. Last year, you kind of could get sucked into the Pacers trap a little bit. The vacuum, so to speak, of, hey, we can get up and down. There's points to be had. We take shots. And now, sweet, you took a shot. Now we get to run. Now it's like, oh, actually, swing. Yeah, make a third rotation. How do you want to handle this action? We're gonna test this out a little bit. So they have to kind of just figure that out. And I think, you know, Tyrese Haliburton will play better. Bennedict Mathurin's been good. Pascal Siakam's been good. They're 5-0 when Miles Turner scores 15 or more. Base still there, but this is the result of your success.
Mm-hmm. Teams are trying to do different things. Like, I think that's where you've seen more, as we've talked about on the pod, like, full court pressure rate is just up across the league. And so naturally the Pacers have seen more of it. in terms of the possessions per game that they're seeing a full court pressure, they're still seeing the lowest amount per game in the league. But it has bogged them down at a different level than it did last year per second spectrum. Their average possession length on a full court pressure rep whenever they faced it was about 16.7 seconds, which was the third fastest mark in the league. This year, that's up to 18.2 seconds per possession, which is 18th. I think that full court pressure combined with what teams are continuing to do against Tyrese Haliburton off the ball. We're going to be physical with you. We're going to face guard, make sure you don't get the ball. I think that's the downside is probably too strong. I guess I'll say that's the other side of Tyrese being as open to like lending the offense to others and the effect they can have, because he is fine with, I'll get an alley. Oh, you got it. I'll just toss it up to you. You get to run it. Or if they're trying to press me before the inbound, okay, hey, I'm pointing to Andrew Nembhard when he was healthy in there, or whoever the other guard is. Okay, you bring it up, you do it, et cetera. I don't think they can afford to fall into the trap of let's just keep doing this. And I do think you've seen Tyrese work more to get the ball. And in general, he's just been more aggressive. And so you're starting to see counters to that, what defenses are trying to do to bog them down. But that is an element that's kind of stood out early on. And I think part of regaining some of the form from last year is being able to counter that more consistently. They've gone from second in pace to 16th in pace overall this year. Even if they don't get back up to second, can they get back to 10th? I think those, just winning in the margins that way, because I think to use your Kings advantage, the best case scenario is that we work through this stuff and now we can play our style and we also feel more comfortable doing this other stuff when things aren't going in a perfect way. And like, I don't think it's inherently bad that they're slower. If you're getting the juice from the transition attack, if you're getting the Tyrese aggression, and then you also can slow things down because we got Pascal Siakam who can boogie inside the arc. We can do the inside out thing with Miles Turner. We get these complimentary drives from Benedict Mathurin. Now you're looking at a more complete basketball team. So I don't think this has to be a bad thing, but it's very clear that the Pacers are kind of working through all of these things. And so I'm intrigued. I am intrigued. Did you have a team that you wanted to mention in the segment?
Just thinking in general about the landscape. I have a question for you.
What's up?
I believe, and just want to make sure I don't say something silly here. There are... Actually, I'll frame it this way. Would you be surprised to know that Dallas is a top 10 in both offensive rating and defensive rating?
I tell you what, if you follow the conversation around Dallas, it certainly didn't sound that way.
That's kind of where my head kind of goes. I want to tell some people your team is better than you think they are and allow the season to play out a little bit. Because the Mavs, you know, I have no glass cleaner. Eighth in offensive rating, ninth in defensive rating. There's only four teams in the top 10. One of the other ones is in each. One of the other ones is Memphis, who I feel like their fan base wants to get rid of the coach every other day. I think you take this year over last year. I understand the concerns, but we live in this era where people want to have the right to complain and let their complaint go unchecked, which is why the Denver Nuggets season is apparently falling apart once again, despite the fact that they just have not had Nikola Jokic.
And we just talked about Denver. And Jokic, for that matter.
But I digress. The Minnesota Timberwolves, ninth in offensive rating, 11th in defensive rating. Does it feel like that?
No.
Well, here's the thing. Their offense got better. Everyone just forgot how much they needed an elite defense to make that run. Mm-hmm. Now you got to figure out, how do we get our defense up at least another notch? It's one of the things I'm noticing is, and this isn't like rocket science, but if you look at the middle of the pack teams, they're just kind of there on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. Not horrible, not bad, but just kind of there. So which one of those teams takes a lead? Does Miami fix their defense? Does Indiana fix their offense? Does Milwaukee do something? What happens there? Because you have teams like the Knicks and Lakers who can afford some of their defensive question marks because the offense is at a certain level right now. You have some of these balanced teams who are really good on both ends of the floor, but which end is going to be the one that hits them on that night? Yeah. So just something to keep in consideration as you kind of go throughout the season, especially with the NBA Cup being competitive. I told you I was going to get funny, and it's gotten and it very is. Funny. just keep waiting. Tune in. Wait till you see the standings. But that's more my thought process. Like, I'll put it this way, Nikias. Let's think about this. I'll rambling, but we're trying something different. Can you tell me how many teams are in the bottom half of defensive rating that have an above 500 record?
Ooh. So below average defense, but 500 or better record.
Yeah.
Well, talked about one of them in the Lakers.
That's one.
Trying to think who else has like million
people. There's only two more.
Oh, okay. Darn, I was about to say, I'm going to guess four. But so I would have been over there. Good offense, man. Has Boston's defense gotten back to where it was?
They're 10th.
Okay. I'm trending up then. I remember it was early in the season. They were like first in offense by a mile, but like 18th in defense. I'm like, we'll see when that corrects. But okay. So Boston's at 10th. Where's Phoenix with all the injuries and stuff?
14th.
Okay. Darn. All right. Fair enough. If not Phoenix, 500 or better record.
Tap, goat.
Yeah, I'll tap. For the interest of time.
Denver and the Knicks.
Oh, those are so obvious, too. Actually, a quick free throw adjacent question. I said, what do you make of the Knicks right now?
Karl-Anthony Towns is very good at basketball. He's cooking. They don't have depth, and they don't have size off the bench. And that convolutes some of their lineups, and they have a very specific issue in pick and roll because of the lack of size. And they have to figure out how to maximize their three best defenders.
It would also help if one of their three best defenders was performing consistently like one of the three best defenders.
Ooh, who are you talking about?
Which pains me to say.
Who are you talking about?
This hasn't felt like a great McHale year.
Uh-oh. Well,
and, you know, long-term right dunkers know. Like, I've been singing the praises of McHale Bridges since the Phoenix days. I'm a huge fan. And so I don't think he's, like, cooked as a defender or anything like that. But he has absolutely been below his level. I think part of the New York Knicks formula was going to be, okay, maybe the cap portion may not be great, but we got OG, we got Josh Hart, we got Mikal Bridges. A lot of length, a lot of off-ball instinct, a lot of great screen navigators if you want to have Cat in the drop. And so we should be fine. Josh Hart's been good. OG's been otherworldly. So I hope he stays healthy so there can actually be like an all-defense first team push, et cetera, et cetera. OG's been tremendous. Mikal hasn't held up his end of the bargain yet. It's a bit disappointing. I think he can turn that around. We've just seen too much good defense from him throughout his career. So I think it'll bounce back. But, you know, as of November 18th, it hasn't been good enough. That's got to be better.
All right.
So there you go. And now I just say very quickly on the Dallas front, them being top 10 in offense and defense, and that also tracks on cleaning the glass, by the way. But them being top 10 in both, despite this being a really weird start to the season for Luka Doncic, that should be encouraging, no? I don't have any doubts that Luka is going to play better on both ends of the floor.
A lot of season left.
I think they're going to be fine. Steve, do you have any player shout-outs for us?
No, you have 18 of them. Go ahead.
18? It's not true. I actually have a pretty short list this week. But we will start the bidding with De'Aaron Fox, who is scoring all of the baskets. 109 points over his last two games. That is the most in a two-game span since Kobe Bryant in 2007. I think that is a good bit of business. That seems to be pretty good company as a scorer. 60 points and 7 assists against the Minnesota Timberwolves. 49-9 against the Utah Jazz, in which, in that Jazz game, he stole the ball from Isaiah Collier, nearly lost his shoe, jammed the foot back into the shoe during play, and then poor Isaiah Collier worked his way back in transition defense. I'm here. De'Aaron Fox just plows right through him, gets a layup, and it's just like, well, darn. Which, quick aside, why are teams treating Isaiah Collier like this? I like him as a prospect. I got the Spurs game still burned in my brain where they just stopped guarding him, and Will Hardy had to take him out. And then you got the De'Aaron Fox play. That's just a one-play example. But let the young man cook. He's talented. He's good. But anyway.
Let the young man cook? My whole job is to not let you cook.
I
what
know,
do you mean?
I know. I'm just saying. But no, on the year, De'Aaron Fox, 29 points per game, 5 boards, nearly 6 assists, 58% on twos, flirting with career high levels there, 35% from 3 on volume. You've seen the rim rate and the three-point rate slightly lower from last season's mark, a little bit more work inside the arc. The assisted two-point rate is up for him, though. So you're seeing better balance with the pull-ups. Those are going in at a higher rate. You're also seeing the cutting being unlocked a little bit more, playing off of Sabonis, being able to play off DeMar DeRozan. Yeah, we'll see on that regard. But I've enjoyed the play of De'Aaron Fox, and this two-game stretch from him was incredibly loud. So I wanted to make sure I gave him a shout. I am here to offer an apology to Victor Wembanyama because on the last YouTube episode that we had, the Spurs were the team that I was thinking about, and I had a lot of Wemby thoughts. It's like, hey, it's not the end of the world, but this has been a weird start to the season for him. The offensive context isn't great. You know, center on Jeremy Sochan when he's there, paint being crowded, etc. Also, Wemby's shot selection, a little iffy right now. Threes aren't falling yet. And since we recorded that episode, I think that was a Monday morning when we recorded, 37.3 points per game, 11.3 rebounds, 4.3 assists, 1 steal, 2.7 blocks. Shooting 43.9% from 3 on nearly 14 attempts. And so I am very glad that I said yet, but that was a very quick turnaround for Victor Wembanyama, which includes the 50 ball that he had against the Wizards, 34-14 against the Kings, 28-14 against the Lakers. And in that three-game stretch, the Spurs, 2-1 record in those 3 games, but won his minutes by 36 points. So, Wemby, we see you. You are incredibly good. And the shots are going to fall to this degree. I have much less to say about the selection.
That brother's made 18 threes in his last 3 games. It's almost like
yeah,
you just let it play out. And the very, very tall person gets to his spots and takes and makes shots that you can't defend.
It's tough.
You can't defend it. I just, you know, I understand the pushback, volume scores, why you take that shot. Because if I make it, what do you do?
Hey, that's fair. See, this is why I wanted to make sure I didn't press the button. He stinks. He's overrated. There's none of that. It's like, hey, it's kind of weird right now. Let's see how it plays out. And it has played out in a very loud fashion. So quick props to Victor Wembanyama. While we're in San Antonio, very quick hat nod to Chris Paul, 10 points, 8 assists, a steal, shooting 38% for 3 this season. But since the last time recorded, he became the third player in NBA history to accumulate over 12,000 career assists. So I wanted to make sure I shouted him out. And small guards just aren't supposed to play this long and still be productive NBA players. And so the fact that Chris Paul is still doing this, I think, is impressive. So I wanted to give a quick shout to Chris Paul. And again, Wemby, my bad. I guess I spoke too hastily. Last two players I want to shout out. Jalen Williams, who is averaging 25 points, 7 boards, 5 assists, 2 steals, and a block in the 4 games since Chet Holmgren went down. If you want to have fun with some tracking data, in those 4 games, with Jalen Williams as the contesting defender at the rim, opponent shooting 28.6%. Not the highest of volumes, but that is a number that popped for me. But in general, like, he's had to take on bigger assignments because naturally the Thunder are just without centers at the moment. And on the offensive end, you are still seeing the comfort in isolation. Can get to his pull-up whenever he wants to. Really aggressive driver. Can knock down shots from the perimeter. Solid playmaker. So he's doing everything offensively. He's taking on a bigger workload defensively, figuratively and literally. And he's doing his darn thing. I do want the Thunder to get healthy so they don't have to do this for like 95% of the minutes playing this small. And you saw some of the downsides of that in that Dallas matchup to where PJ Washington in particular is like, well, actually, I'm just bigger than you. And they got busy on the offensive glass, but Jalen Williams deserves his props. He is putting in work. And with a defensive theme shout out of the way, let me go right to Dyson Daniels, who over his last 6 games, he's played 30 plus minutes in all those games, 17.5 points, 5 boards, 3.5 assists, 5.2 steals, and a block. 6.2 stocks to 2.3 fouls over his last 6 games. It is some of the most ridiculous stuff I have ever seen. And in the midst of that 6-game stretch, he had a 4-game stretch on the road against Detroit, at home against Chicago, on the road against Boston, at home against Washington. 7 steals, 6 steals, 6 steals, 6 steals. 25 steals to 9 fouls over those 4 games. Now, I've enjoyed the cutting and I've enjoyed the drives from Dyson offensively. but he's just been everywhere defensively. You get some of the more boring screen navigation, stay in front of the man, defend the drive, do so without fouling stuff. But it's on ball steals. It's passing lane steals. It's I'm at the nail. You think I'm leaving. I'm actually coming back. You try to drive. I put my hand out there and get the ball anyway. He has just been an absolute menace. If he stays healthy, I don't think he's going to average 5 steals per game moving forward. But like, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a lock for an all defensive team, and rightfully so. I've just really enjoyed Dyson Daniels' experience, and I know the Hawks are enjoying everything he's been able to provide on both ends of the floor. So wanted to give Dyson Daniels the shout out there. And that concludes my player section, Steve. Hey there, I kept the list under 20.
Good job.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Any players for you, or did you want to move to the news?
I just want to shout out De'Aaron Fox. That was all. That's the only player I was going to add.
Fair enough. Fair enough. That man is balling indeed. Okay. So quickly on the injury / get well soon front. The Spurs have been without Greg Popovich for a little bit. Was announced last week that he suffered a mild stroke. He is expected to fully recover, but naturally out indefinitely as he recovers. So just a general get well soon to Greg Popovich. Jose Alvarado suffered a hamstring strain. He is out for at least 6 weeks. As if the Pelicans could afford more injuries. So again, I say, I want that team to get some semblance of healthy. And De'Anthony Melton, as Steve mentioned a little bit earlier, is trying to get me on the bench defensive duo thing. De'Anthony Melton with a sprained left ACL. He is currently out indefinitely, so get well soon to him. On the news front, we may have a new All-Star game format, Steve. Little 4-team tournament. 3 teams of 8 All-Stars apiece. So that'll signify the, you know, that'll take care of the 24 All-Stars. And then the winner of the Rising Stars Challenge. You'll get a little mini tournament there to figure out the winner. And then we may also get Steph Curry and Sabrina Ionescu in the 3-point shootout again with some extras. Maybe Klay Thompson, maybe Caitlin Clark, per Shams Charani of ESPN. How do you feel about the potential All-Star changes? Do you like those?
I'm 37 years old. That ain't for me. I mean, cool.
That ain't gonna do it for you.
You put the young fellas in there, so hey, y'all gotta try hard. I get it. It's interesting. They get to compete in the All-Star game. But again, vacation, et cetera, I understand. I don't know how the 3 All-Star teams would be divvied up. I imagine you still have Western Conference All-Stars, Eastern Conference All-Stars. But then how do you slice those 3 teams up? I was fine with it. So what do you think?
I think it's a cool twist, but like, I still lean towards I just don't want the defensive effort to be zero. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not stupid. Like, I don't expect playoff level intensity in an All-Star game. And at this point, I don't even expect like going back to the 80s and 90s, that level of stuff. Like, it just has to be above like 5. You know what I mean? I've just been of the mind there is a middle ground between nothing and playoff intensity. And I think the players could have done and still can do a better job of finding that balance in the All-Star game. And again, I understand why you don't want to do that, because it's not just the All-Star game for them. It's media stuff. It's different brand appearances and everything like that. So like, it's a tiring weekend for these players. And so I get it. And that's why, again, I don't expect 100% effort, but I wish if I had the choice, I would take a 35% effort clip in the traditional All-Star game setup versus the 14 tournament.
Once again, point out, it's the threes. This is Matthew I like to talk about. Yeah. One team make a whole bunch of pull-up threes. What we guarding? We're down 18.
And now it's officially cooked. And so that part is intriguing me. I would say to the 3-point shootout portion of the program, though, that seems fun. The Steph versus Sabrina was a ratings monster, but more importantly, the competition was really good. Sabrina almost pulled that off, and Steph had to shoot the absolute leather off the ball to win. And so involving teammates or just 2 more players, again, Klay Thompson's name was mentioned, Caitlin Clark's name was mentioned. I do wonder, do we just get Team NBA versus Team W, just get the Splash Brothers back again, or do we have like Steph plus Sabrina, Steph plus Caitlin? I'm curious to see how they go about that portion. I think either one would be fine, to be clear. But I just literally want to know, like, what were they thinking on that front? How did they divvy up teams? Or is it just going to be like a four-player competition and there are no teams? Like, that'd be interesting to me as well. I enjoyed the three-point contest last year. So we'll see how that goes. Did you have any three-point contest thoughts? Or?
Nope.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. And then to close things out on the W front, the Dallas Wings securing the number one overall pick. Draft lottery was on Sunday. Wings get the top pick. The Sparks picking second. The Sky picking third. And the Washington Mystics picking fourth. Is it just Paige Bueckers to Dallas? Like, do we need to think too hard about this?
No.
Okay.
No disrespect, but no. You do not have to think about it very hard about this.
Okay.
Arike did not tweet that for it to be overthought. No. Turn the page.
Ah, well.
Put the bookmark in.
You know what? Well done. Well done. Shout out to the Dallas Wings. Tell you what, you get Kurt Miller, you get the number one pick. Some positives in their offseason. Now, we do still have to figure out what is happening with Satu Sabally. I would imagine it is just going to be core designation. You're not going anywhere. But there does seem to be at least a little bit more smoke than you would expect for a situation like that. So we'll see if Satu is back. But tell you what, Paige Bueckers as a Dallas wing would be pretty cool. Paige plus Arike in the backcourt. I would personally enjoy that one. So shout out to Dallas. Any closing basketball thoughts or anything you want to get off your chest before you head out of here?
All good.
Okay, fair enough. Well, in that case, thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on the YouTube channel every Tuesday. So subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. But we do go audio on Tuesdays and also a second episode later in the week, generally Fridays. But the last episode did come out on Thursday. We had Lexi Hole for the first 20 or so minutes. There's a Lexi Hole video on the channel. So that is less than half of our conversation with her. So if you like the full thing, check out the last episode of The Dunker Spot, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. And in general, again, subscribe to the pod. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. Steve does not want people to follow him. Following.
Yeah, we're good.
If you want.
Nikias got you. Right there. Which side am I on? This one or this one? Whichever one. That guy.
Fair enough. I guess don't follow Steve, but also follow Steve. But beyond that, we will catch y'all. Oh, before we get out of here.
Got about come join the outro.
Steve, mess me up. Darn it.
You tried to remix it. You should have just let me yell, don't.
Trying to combat your shenanigans. This is what I get. This is what I get. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties if you haven't already. If you have a League Pass subscription, log on in, create your profile. It's free. We are watching basketball games every night. We are live every night. The link to the room is in your podcast description. So come hang with us. Come watch some hoops. Come get smarter. Also, come have some fun. We have some of our other members on stage sometimes, so we get a little bit of randomness. We had some Fortnite going on yesterday. We played some college football 25 as we have an online Dunker Spot Dynasty happening. We're in year 3. So a lot of fun things happening in the room. You get some randomness. So come hang with some really cool people. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Yeet.